This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Brett of House Fry, Sir David of House Fraser, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Tyrion 3 of A Clash of Kings, and in our Maester study, we will be discussing the Summer Isles.
That is true. We are also doing this episode live in our Facebook group, as you guys know. You know, it's dark times out there, Ez.
Yes, it is. I mean,
you'd say that the night is dark and full of terrors, but the days are dark. And the streets are empty. So
they are.
I mean, they're literally empty. We're not even legally allowed to go outside anymore. That's where we're at. It's crazy. But you know what? We're going to hang out with you guys today. We're going to talk some Game of Thrones. We're going to talk this chapter. And it's going to be a fun time. Hope everybody's, you know, just hanging out, having some fun. It's what we're going to be doing today. So, Ez, how are you doing, man?
Well, like you said, been inside a lot. I actually went out today and took like a walk, and I was sort of like, am I allowed to do this? I was just, you know, like triple checking, you know, but yeah, I went down the path, did that for a bit. I went and got some food for my dad, just because we're dropping stuff off on the back porch type of thing there. But yeah, that's really about it. Trying to make some reading, been reading a lot and listening ahead in the book, which has been fun. So I did like a whole Theon read through, which has been crazy. For some reason, it was the next Theon chapter that we come to. I hit that and I was like, what happens next? And I just kind of kept going. And it was great. I actually learned one or two things I had forgotten. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, but nice. I'm doing well. How are things over there in Oregon?
Oh, man, we just got shut down today. Fortunately, I work in the freight industry, so I'm not shut down, although, you know, people are getting laid off a lot of places. There's probably a lot of our listeners that have actually been laid off, which is crazy. I'm okay for now, but it doesn't seem like that may entirely be the case. So if anybody of you guys are in that position, I certainly know how it goes. So hopefully this stuff, you know, can blow over soon and everybody's lives can go back to somewhat normal. But other than that, I'd say I'm pretty good. I went to the coast over the weekend.
Yeah.
Went crabbing, right? I thought I was Theon out there. Like, you know, Pike. I'm on this. You know, at first I was like, is this going to be like Deadliest Catch, right? What are we talking?
Yeah.
I get there and it's nothing like Deadliest Catch. We're on a rinky dink little boat. All right. You know, we got to throw our crab pots in. They sink to the bottom. You wait around. You come back. And then, you know, we caught five crab and we probably spent $30 on chicken as bait. So it's like we should have just, you know, bought chicken and had wings. So,
right.
I don't know, but it was fun. It was a cool experience. First time I've ever done it. Would I go again? I don't know. I mean, maybe I guess when it's more in season, but then it's a lot colder and it's already cold on the coast. It's not like those, you know, Florida beaches down there or Southern California beaches, but yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was cool. I had a good time.
Well, here's my thing. I mean, how deep was it, man? Like, how deep was that water?
I don't know. It's kind of all over the place.
Okay.
Oh, you could drown. I mean, you could definitely drown. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I'm like the Dothraki, man. I don't want to be anywhere near, you know, like the ocean. I don't trust it. I don't trust it.
I don't like it. We don't know what's out there.
No, I have no clue.
We have no idea.
Yeah, that's so. I would say, you know, Deadliest Catch. I mean, it was to me. It would have felt the same. I would have been like, screw this. This is too much.
Well, I mean, you know, so we're on this little. I mean, we're on this little boat. I mean, and I don't know how big it is, but yeah, you know, there's other people out there. They got like the arm that goes down and like, you know, like picks, grabs the thing and brings it back up. So I don't know how much better they did, but so
they might have got one or two more, right? Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, it's not really, it's towards the end of the season. So, but I don't even really like crab. So, you know,
I'm not super
big on it. But I did feel very Theon Greyjoy ish while I was out there.
That's cool. That sounds fun. Oh, wow. Okay. So again, lots going on. I was telling Sir Matt that I have this couple of different things I want to work on this week. Just little YouTube content that we're trying to start up. And finally, people may notice I'm in a little different setup. I haven't quite got all my posters and, you know, my stuff up yet, but I'll get there. So it's a little different here. Finally got upgraded. And all the way kind of moved in, so feels good, I guess, just in time for the quarantine. So
yeah,
there's that. Yeah. So we're going to be doing hopefully more of these hangouts and getting more YouTube content up there as well. So it's exciting, man.
It's good. All right. Well, there's not a ton of news going on right now. Gurr is also in quarantine. He said mm-hmm. he's safe. Feeling good. He's in quarantine. Does it mean it'll help him finish the book? Probably not.
Right.
So that's where we're at on that front. But there was a Game of Thrones kind of tie-in last night. I don't know if you saw this on like Twitter and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Drogon had kind of a cameo in Westworld. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really watched Westworld, so I'm kind of unfamiliar with it. I think it's, to my knowledge, it's, these characters live inside basically like TV or something, and then there's all these different worlds they can go to. I mean, I think you're more familiar with it, but that's from my kind of knowledge of it.
Yeah, it's like a virtual reality. I mean, they go in there instead of like putting something on and just, it's like you're literally going into a different, like a created world, if you will. And you want to go into, it starts in like this Western, this West world kind of thing, what Western mm-hmm. world. And so you can, you know, you got, AIs, you got all sorts of different things. So that dragon that they had, it was almost like a nod that if you really wanted to go to Westeros, you know, we're preparing that, we're making, you know, a way in which you could go there and fully experience it. You know, you put on different garb, you put on different thing. Everything feels real, and you get to go back and kind of experience different periods of time in history, or just a fantasy world, is the way I looked at it. So that was kind of cool. Kind of cool that they did. They had it, him in there. So yeah,
cool. All right. Well, that's most of the Game of Thrones news ish right now. So. Would we have something a little bit for the Maester's study today?
We do. But before we get to that, I thought we'd talk about just were the Ice and Fire Con. I don't know if we got a chance to actually full on mention this. I don't think we're going to get to. Is it canceled all the way, or has it just been postponed?
I think they said it's been moved to October.
Oh, it's been moved to October. Okay.
Yeah, that was the last I remember. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I can pull it up here real quick. But, kind of a bummer because we were hoping to see some of you guys there. And it seems like, what was that? That was going to be just in February. It seems like we're still going to be going through a lot of this quarantine and different things with the virus. So that could be a little crazy. Yeah, it's temporarily suspended and it's been postponed. So,
yeah,
that's a bummer. But just wanted to let you guys know in case you hadn't seen the news on that or you were planning on going and mm-hmm. didn't know. You know, it's here in Ohio, man. They have really been, things have been shut down for a bit. So, and things are getting canceled.
And I am still planning on going back to the Ohio area in April, barring my flight not getting canceled, because a lot of flights are just getting canceled right now. Maybe we'll have our own little Ice and Fire Con as his new place. So, not saying that he's throwing a party, but basically saying he's throwing a party.
He's throwing a party.
I mean, there can only be, you know, like four people there, and we all have to sit 6 feet apart from each other. So very exclusive seats.
Right.
very exclusive seats. Maybe we'll live stream it. But
that'd be hysterical.
With our hazmat suits on. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's wow. definitely something. So yeah, unfortunate that it's been canceled, kind of the way everything's going right now. So I'll have to look up the exact date and see, you know, how that works with my schedule. But as long as it's, you know, I'll still try to make it to that if it gets moved. So
yeah. Yeah, I will too, because I think it was almost like you. I remember you texted me and you said, "So it's the second year we've tried to go and it's not working out." So, you know, it's like, is it
three strikes, you're out?
Are they trying to? I mean,
well, we'll just have to make our own con. Bend the Knee Con is coming. I don't know where. I don't know when, but we'll make it happen.
Yeah, we'll start it at my place, like a pre little, you know, and then we'll just grow it from there. So.
All right.
Well,
so yeah, should we move on over to Maester Study today? I think we're gonna talk a little bit about the Summer Isles.
Yeah, and really, I just want to bring this up. You've got two characters, Shataya and Alayaya, who are in this chapter. We come across them, and I thought, you know, just for a point of reference, just to talk about this place, the Summer Isles. Where are they, and who are the people from there? Been trying to challenge ourselves to look at different regions, look at different places, different characters. So, you know, these are two characters that Alayaya actually ends up coming back and is around, and even her mother for a time. Things are different. You know, it's funny in this chapter, Tyrion kind of talks about how that in their culture, in the Summer Isle culture, being in the pillow house and giving pleasure is not necessarily frowned upon. And matter of fact, it's maybe even a form of worship. And Tyrion, you know, wants somebody to tell the High Septon that, you know, this is a good thing, you know. And maybe he'd be more interested in religion and stuff. So that's kind of cool, a little different. But it is just south of Westeros and Essos. And there's a character there. And I just in looking all this up and stuff, I kind of stumbled across... I think it's Jalabar, I think is how you say it. I'm not exactly sure. I just know that this is the guy who's always kind of petitioning like Robert and later on Cersei to give him the means to go back. And he's like a prince. So they call him the Prince of the Red Flower Vale. And he wants to go back and take back, his kingdom, if you will. And go back there, but he needs resources and stuff, so he's in exile. And it's just kind of funny because he's always in the court, always petitioning, always trying to do this. But at the same time, it's sort of like, I don't know that it's as sincere of a petition as maybe one would think. It's almost like he's petitioning, it's all sort of a front, and really he's very happy just being in the court there and having the title of an exile prince. So that was someone who I thought was interesting from the Summer Isles that is actually in the entire series and has been there since before the series started. So just to keep an eye on that individual and some of the alliances that could be made with him, I think is pretty cool. So, but yeah, that's really about it. I mean, there's you could get into some of the history here in this. You know, Nymeria stops there when she's leaving the Roin, and her people are there. They're not able to sustain themselves. They had a large group of people, and the soil was not good enough for them to kind of grow crops and plants and things. And so, you know, then they obviously come over to Dorne. Some of the people were left there, and a lot of them were women. And so that's, that's a little bit of the history there. But it keeps popping up, and you'll hear about the Summer Isles from time to time throughout the series. And different characters who have come from there or whose mothers, oftentimes it's their mothers. I think it's Cirilla Sand. I think they say her mother is from the Summer Isles. And there's someone else as well that was an important character. But anyway, yeah, just interesting. They also have their own kind of speech. They do speak the common tongue, but then they have sort of their own language as well, which is pretty cool. So yeah, Tyrion comes across Alayaya in this chapter. And you kind of uses her as a decoy so he can go see, you know, Shay, and he meets up with Varys. So
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, and I'm reading a little bit here on the wiki, just some stuff. It says like gemstones are kind of what they have an abundance of, and so that's kind of what they use to trade and things like that. And so it is interesting when you think about it, because I think we just we're just so caught up in Westeros, and Westeros really is almost like its own. You got three different territories there with the north. Well, you could really almost, I think when we think of Westeros, I kind of think about it in four segments. You know, you've got the Beyond the Wall, the North, the South, and then Dorne, because Dorne's always kind of in its own thing. And of course, you get the Iron Islands, and you could split it up even further. But and then, you know, so to me, it's mostly Westeros and Essos. And I almost just forget about the Summer Isles a lot, but they're there, mm-hmm. and they're their own thing, and they're just this other culture that we kind of forget about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and they just this kind of pop up from time to time, and we do get a lot of trading going on with them. I mean, at one point, Robert Baratheon is actually he actually likes the idea of invading the Summer Isles and you know, maybe having a partnership with this exiled prince and maybe getting some, I don't know, some of those gems or precious resources and things like that in this partnership to restore this exiled, you know, prince. But yeah, so yeah, it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat, actually. And we'll, as it comes up more, we'll pay attention to it. And now we'll really pay attention to that prince as well, because he'll be in the court for a while, and he'll be someone who keeps kind of popping up. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, on over to the reread. Last week, we were in Arya 4. That's where Arya and the others decided to spend the night in the holdfast of an abandoned town on the southern shores of the God's Eye. That night, Lannister raiders led by Sir Armory Lork arrive to demand that they open the gate. When Yoren refuses, a fight breaks out as the battle turns against them. Yoren orders Arya to get the survivors out through an escape tunnel in the burning barn. Before escaping, Arya throws an axe to the three criminals trapped in their wagon. This week we're in Tyrion 3. Last time we were with Tyrion, Tyrion had dined with Lord Janus Slynt. They discussed the murder of King Robert's bastard daughter, Eddard Stark's execution, and candidates for the commander of the City Watch. Tyrion then has Slynt taken into custody to join the Night's Watch. Afterward, he discusses the same topics with Varys. This week, Tyrion 3, the small council discusses Stannis' declaration that Cersei's children are bastard-born of incest. Cersei wants the letter suppressed, but Tyrion and Littlefinger convince her they should treat the letters with contempt while spreading their own rumor that Stannis' daughter is illegitimate. Tyrion leaves the council to meet with the city's smiths to commission an immense chain. Then meets with Varys via a secret passage in a brothel. All right. I'll always read just a little bit of the beginning here. The queen was not disposed to wait on Varys. Treason is vile enough, she declared furiously. But this is barefaced, naked villainy, and I do not need the menacing eunuch to tell me what must be done with villains. Tyrion took the letters from his sister's hand and compared them side by side. There were two copies, the words exactly alike, though they had been written by different hands. Maester Frenkin received the first massive missive at Castle Stokeworth, Grand Maester Pycelle explained. The second copy came through Lord Giles. Littlefinger fingered his beard. If Stannis bothered with them, it's past certainty every other lord in the Seven Kingdoms saw a copy as well. So, the letters that Stannis had written, if you remember back to the Davos chapter where he's, it's almost comedic in a way, right? Where his scribe is writing it and he's arguing about how it should be written, right? He's like, well, you know, they're trying to make Jaime Lannister and all these guys sound, they're trying to degrade him a little bit. Stannis is like, well, he's still a knight. You still need to call him a knight. Right. You still, you know, this. You need to call him this. And then he says, you know, I never had any love for my brother, you know. So that's those letters that were being written that everyone is now seeing.
Right, yeah. And it's crazy too. Like Cersei is her reaction to this, right, just tells you everything. And I think that's what's pretty neat in the way that Tyrion kind of notices her response, her lashing out here, being so just I don't know, it's overkill. It's almost like she's covering for something, right? She's trying to react like she's so disgusted because it's true. And it's just when you read through the first time, it's pretty obvious, and especially once you get, you know, Tyrion kind of has those she's asking for, you know, what evidence does he have, and Tyrion kind of goes, well, you know, none, right? Why would there be any? I mean, that didn't happen. Exactly. So there's no evidence to be had. And she's kind of like, yeah, right.
it is so interesting, the relationship, the big time relationship you have going on here with Cersei and Tyrion, and then also Littlefinger being part of the mix, and how the Game of Thrones is being played on so many different levels in the first part of this chapter. It's insane because you have Cersei and Tyrion going at each other. Then you have Littlefinger vying for himself over there. And then you also have Tyrion knowing that he can't say anything about, you know, well, I know Cersei's kids are, you know, illegitimate, because that would hurt him. It would damage him and his, you know, and the Lannister name. So it's like Tyrion has to go along with Cersei's lie, but still also fight against her while not giving any information to Littlefinger, but at the same time, you know, attacking Littlefinger. It's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy. It's almost like, I mean, at this point, that was a good point that Tyrion is maybe even trying to protect the Lannister name by not really saying much to Tyrion, but also trying to show his sister that, hey, you're sitting in a room with other people who are just as smart as us, and be careful what you are, you know, conveying or letting slip or whatever, kind of more be on your game. So it just shows you that Tyrion really has the mind for this and is a master at what he does. Cersei, she is as well, but she's cunning, but man, she can get emotional. And it's sort of like when it comes to her kids and them being in danger, that's where she really just loses it. So
yeah. And then you get that internal Tyrion dialogue, you know, where she's talking about it. Cersei turned on him with green-eyed fury. Are you utterly witless? Did you read what he says? The boy Joffrey, he calls him, and he dares to accuse me of incest, adultery, and treason. And then Tyrion's in his mind, only because you're guilty. Right. I mean, because Tyrion knows, because it's true. I mean, he's got a point, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cersei, come on. You know? Yeah. He knows that something's, I mean, he's known since they were kids, and it's like he's suspected, whatever. But yeah. Yeah. What's interesting later on, the book is brought up actually. You know, like it's by Varys and stuff, which is pretty cool. So
then their plan, which actually is it's somewhat of a decent plan, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, not so much. But in the short term, I think it is, just because, you know, the small folk are going to talk and they're going to say, well, I heard this and I heard this. And then it spirals out of control and, you know, gets kind of washed away, and Littlefinger suggests this, is to do the same thing. Right. To have the same sort of letter written, the same, rumors spread about Stannis's daughter possibly being illegitimate, because Stannis's wife and Stannis don't really have a great relationship. So it just kind of makes sense to say, well, you know, Stannis didn't sleep with his wife because who wants to?
Right. Yeah. And actually what's interesting about that whole situation is, remember a couple of weeks back we were talking about Melisandre and when did she show up? And there's like literally one sentence in this in this chapter that addresses that, and it actually talks about the fact that she's been keeping company with a Red Priestess for a while, and it actually makes you, I think you mix that in there. She's mixed up in this with R'hllor. This Red Priestess seems a little, you know, weird, I would say, to the rest of Westeros, and so that's also why Tyrion points out, you know, this was done in the light of the Lord or whatever.
He comments that line is something that's said in Essos quite a bit. The right, Free Cities. Yes. That line is yeah.
Right. And so makes you think, just to your point, you know, when Littlefinger brings this up, well, they're not known for their love. They're not known for having a real good romantic relationship, and his wife is mixed in with this priestess and stuff. So it's probably going to work. I mean, it's going to be something that, you know, even Tyrion kind of says, yeah, it's like, you know, Littlefinger's onto something there. I think this is maybe a good idea to plant this seed of doubt here that she hasn't been faithful, and that maybe even Patchface was involved, which is crazy.
Well, I think Patchface is involved, because you and I both think Patchface is involved in just about anything and everything.
That's right. That's right.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, do you think it was, a good plan? It doesn't really seem to do a whole lot in the grand scheme of things.
No, I think it's just like the idea. I mean, if anything, too, what they're trying to do is, I think, divert Cersei's attention from all of this, get her to calm down, because the more she focuses on it, dwells on it, tries to stamp it out, the more those flames are just going to kind of keep, you know, rising and spreading and stuff. So to do that, you give her this task of like, yeah, let's spread this other false rumor and let's go blow for blow here, really. But then also we're not going to cut people's tongues out for this kind of stuff. I mean, we're not going to, you know, go crazy like that, because really then you're saying you fear what they have to say. And that's interesting. So,
yeah. So do you think this is more of a win in the Game of Thrones for Tyrion or for Littlefinger?
Probably Littlefinger right now. Yeah. I mean, you think about like the long game, but like what he did here was he scored a few points with Cersei, and that's really what matters, and that sort of helps push him along in the right direction, the direction he wants to go. It's weird because Tyrion, as much as he's saying and doing the right thing, that's sort of his arc. Is it doesn't matter how smart or how well he manages the kingdom or what he does in the name of the Lannisters or what have you. The only person who cares is Jaime, really. And the only person who seems to really have his back is him. So it's one of the reasons why we hate Cersei. I mean, like, because Tyrion's trying to do what's right, and she literally openly just, you know, mocks him, calls him names in front of other people and stuff. You know, it's just, it's wild. It's crazy. I mean, Tyrion actually, even later on in this chapter, when they meet with Ironbelly, and you realize that, you know, I think she says something to the effect of like, she's going to cut their hands off, or she's going to, you know, do something to them if they don't make enough, chainmail and different armor and stuff like that. So, and it's like, Tyrion has the thought sort of like, wow, there's my sweet sister again, you know, gathering more friends for us and just doing, really undoing and staining the Lannister name. People don't want to work for you, that they're working out of fear. I don't know, same thing that's going on with Joffrey. And I think Tywin knows that's not a good thing. And he does send Tyrion to straighten it all out, but it's not really... even if he does straighten it out, I just feel like Tyrion can't win. I mean, he can win at the Game of Thrones, air quote win, but really where he wants to win is with his family. And having the backing of his family is what helps him, you know, get the respect that he deserves from various people. And it's just, I don't know. So Littlefinger, I give him a win here in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this. Just this line here where Tyrion says, the story should not come from us, or it will be self-serving, you know. And then right after that, once more, Littlefinger supplied the answer. And so you can just tell Tyrion is just super annoyed with Littlefinger here. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I think we think of Littlefinger versus Varys a lot. But we don't really get a lot of Littlefinger versus Tyrion and who is the smarter kind of one amongst them, but you really could almost lump him in that same group of the people who aren't warriors, who are playing the Game of Thrones, who aren't really in a full seat of power, like being a king or something like that. I mean, he has hand of the king for a little bit, but certainly not like Cersei, who's in a seat of authority for the entire, the entire story so far.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's really the War of the Small Council. I mean, like, you have those members always, and actually I think it's in the next Tyrion chapter where he starts to really shine and sort of figure out who is on my side, who was with my sister, who is working for their own ambitions, that type of thing, who's working for the greater good of the realm. And that's where he'll kind of show off some of his skills in the Game of Thrones. And I think he gets several wins. I mean, and we start to really like him and see value in what Tyrion has to offer to the story. But yeah, right now Littlefinger's taking it away. And it's just, this chapter, really, he starts to, Littlefinger elevates himself as sort of an adversary, someone he needs to keep an eye on and check on and figure this out. Because Tyrion's known all of this, but now he's in it. He is now here at the court and he has a role to play. So this is where he has to bring in all of his skill set and represent his family.
Yeah. Yeah. So after that kind of conversation is over, you know, this is when, you know, Tyrion's about to take his leave. Cersei asks him why. He says he's having a gift made for Joffrey, which is, you know, a chain. You know, then Cersei says that Joffrey has a lot of chain, but, you know, this cannot, you know, Tyrion, you can't buy his love, right? Tyrion implies that, you know, one day Joffrey may treasure this chain above all others. And so then as he's getting ready to leave is when he runs into Bronn, right? And it's just kind of funny because Bronn's first line is "fuck you, dwarf." Like, I mean, right. Just like a very Bronn, you know, thing to say here.
Yeah, yeah. And really, back to Joffrey just for a second. I mean, again, Tyrion's so witty. He's like, why would I, you know, I know, basically says, I know I have the king's love. That's not something, you know, that's up for debate. And again, in front of other people, and it is the small council, right. But just sort of a reminder that, yeah, we're on the same side. And even if we aren't, and even if I know that Joffrey hates me and whatever, and I'm, you know, you still need to present that to the people. You know, it's something that Tywin has really taught him, that no one messes with a Lannister. We're not doing that. We can have our own sort of interquarrel, or, you know, what have you. But like when he's kind of saying, yeah, I'm not trying to buy Joffrey's love. I know that I already have that. I'm his uncle, etc. You know, but yeah. So yeah, yeah. That's just goes to show, you know, how smart he is and everything.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of the interesting thing about this chapter is it. You get to see Tyrion's relationship with a lot of people across different spectrums, right? So you have him and Cersei, who's his sister, and then you have him and Littlefinger, and then immediately you get a little bit of, you know, him and Joffrey with him talking about him, and then you immediately go outside and you know, Bronn's standing there, the Smiths are in your audience chamber waiting, you know, your pleasure. Waiting my pleasure. I like the ring of that, Bronn. You almost sound a proper, you know, courtier. Courier. Next you'll be kneeling. Fuck you, dwarf. That's Shay's task, Tyrion. You know what I mean? And so you immediately go from you know, this very high level Game of Thrones to just joking around with your buddies.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great.
And that's one of the reasons I think people really like Tyrion as a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, he can. Well, and he already showed us too, just the way his compassion for Bran, his compassion for Jon Snow, going to see the Wall when no one else would, and they laugh and they scoff at it, but he wants to go see it. And there's something there's a little tiny, like in everything that Tyrion says, when like all of his chapters, there's something of this boyish, you know, nature in him, that like, he read these stories as a kid that were high fantasy or that were, you know, historical accounts or whatever, these legends and prophecies, and he's very much into them and wants to go see these places when he has the opportunity, and he knows a lot about them, and I don't know, you just see like a lot like Bran. I mean, he's not able to be a knight, he's not able to be this great warrior, but he's read about them, and in his own way daydreams about, you know, maybe riding a dragon, and he has all these dragon dreams and stuff. So yeah, there's something really appealing to him. And then yeah, like you said, also being very blunt about you know, he and Shay and Bronn and everything. It's just yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so after that is when so he's with Bronn. Then he goes back to his Tower of the Hand, and this is where we get a little bit about Podrick Payne, right? His, you know, his squire, and they talk about how he's kind of like he's timid, he doesn't really talk a lot, and I like Pod, and I think Pod's character development, you know, especially when we first kind of meet him, and you know, he's shy, he's quiet, and you know, by the end he's sleeping with whores, and
oh yeah,
you know, and they're not charging him money and all this stuff, and you know, he goes and he fights with Brienne. Pod's great.
Yeah, oh, he's awesome. Yeah, and it's pretty neat. In reading through this book and reading through Theon chapters, and now I'm on the Bran chapters. Like, well, let me think here. Yeah, so Theon has, you know, his squire, and then, you know, Tyrion's got his squire here, and there's a few of them who, like that idea of having a squire, and seeing how they're humble, and then how they come to these positions of importance is really cool. And so to see Podrick Payne sort of, you know, elevate throughout all of this is awesome. And he kind of thinks that Tywin gave him, you know, Pod because he, as a joke, really.
Right.
But I actually thought when I was reading this, I kind of thought, you know what, maybe, but also maybe he knows that, you know, I mean, House Payne is, again, close to the Lannisters and have been. So I want to do something for this boy, but I don't want to give him to someone who's going to mistreat him. And so I think maybe, in an odd way, Tywin wanted Podrick Payne to go to Tyrion because, you know, Tyrion's going to do right by him. And he plus needs, you know, he needed a servant. And so, yeah, I think it works out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so this is so after he goes back to, you know, his hand, this is when he starts to address the metal workers, right? And telling them.
Yeah.
Telling them, this is kind of interesting, really. I kind of forgot about this whole thing, the chain.
Yeah. Yeah, the chain, like, yeah.
You know, the chain, you know, and how he wants it to be, you know, he orders every forge and every metal worker in the city to put, you know, to work making and joining more and more links, mm-hmm. right? And he puts Goodman Ironbelly, you know, in charge of seeing it done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he basically says, it's sort of a... yeah, he pulls some. I mean, all it takes all the weight of the you know the power of the hand of the king to say your whatever you were working on is done. We're done doing that. I need everyone, whether you were, if you can work metal, you're going to work on this. So a lot of them were a little bit bent out of shape because they worked on gold and silver and different things. And he doesn't matter. You know, he needs iron. He needs this chain built, and it was a task that a lot of them thought was beneath. You know, their whatever, their skill set or their position or whatever. And he kind of says, look, if you don't build a chain or if you don't work on the chain, then you're going to be in chains. And yeah. So he's pretty darn serious about it, which is cool. So yeah, and he realizes that Cersei has also been thinking about this and has been trying to prep in some way because she is asking that they all make armor and chainmail and different things like that. But Tyrion's just on another level, thinking about, you know, ways to actually win. And actually, it's almost like he predicts this battle to happen by, like in Blackwater. Like, he actually kind of predicts that they're going to use their fleet and their ships, and it's odd. That's sort of the defense that he sets up for the city. So, because he knew where his father was, and he knew where help could come from. And how they could last a siege, but then, you know, he also just lays this trap. It's great. So
yeah, and it's you know, the beginning of it's setting the stage, right? And that's because that is the big event, I'd say, of this book is the Battle of Blackwater. I mean, that's by far, you know, the last book is probably Ned Stark getting beheaded. This book, I'd say, the Battle of Blackwater is the big event. That changes everything, really. I mean, if you mm-hmm. want to talk about where we go after the Battle of Blackwater, I mean, Stan, I mean, you know, all the stuff that happens later. But we're getting it now in Chapter 15, the setting the stages for the big, huge battle that's going to be coming towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrion's analyzing in this chapter. He basically thinks that, well, Stannis has proclaimed himself king, and Renly has as well. And he's like, that's not going to sit well with Renly. And so he kind of almost can predict that there's going to be some conflict there before they move together. So that's gives him some hope and maybe slows this down. But he's going into production on this this chain that they'll use, you know, in Blackwater Bay. So, yeah. And then even in the next chapter, we're going to see when we get to Tyrion again, him working on or seeing what it is that his sister, what schemes she's been up to and what is it that she's using. And actually taking something that she started and that was started long ago and molding it to fit sort of his purpose, which is great.
So. Mm. Yeah. Okay. So after we have all that kind of discussion, right, the Smith, you know, as you said, there's the what's the guy's name? Celeron, who's yeah. the one he's the one who complains that, you know, this is for common Smiths, and, you know, he offers to make Sirion a big, you know, a suit of armor, and Tyrion spies, you know, yeah, you can make chains or be in chains.
Right.
And right. So then, okay. So then after that is when, we go outside, and Braun is there, you know, and they're going to, he's got the black ears, right? And that he and Tyrion are going to go do travel. Tyrion muses that he has set hundreds of carpenters to building finishing boats instead of catapults, opening the Kingswood to hunters, and even sent gold cloaks foraging to deal with hunger in the city. But people are still giving him accusing looks. He also reflects that Cersei missed the importance of Stannis declaring himself king and wonders what Renly would make, will make of it. So again, yeah, so we're getting ready to do some more planning, man. I mean, getting ready for this huge battle. And I think it's smart because, you know, he doesn't at all know about the wildfire yet. So, we that's what we think of when we think of the Battle of Blackwater Bay is Tyrion's, you know, genius ploy, you know, and setting off that essentially bombs. But at this point he's thinking, I think maybe his mindset is we can either beat him out there or we can make it hard, and then, you know, he just won't be able to actually siege the castle because it's just really difficult to do so.
So he's laying his plans, and like I said, he's thinking about all the different, the chaos really of all these different kings sort of emerging and stuff. And it's just, it's wild. He's just in the beginning stages of pondering what Stannis and Renly may do to one another. And boy, wouldn't it be bad if they, came together, but
I don't think they'd. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd have a chance.
No, they wouldn't. And that's the thing, is they should have had that conversation. Like, that should have been their focus instead of the whole, the incest and Joffrey not being legitimate. It's like, wait a second, Stannis declared himself king. That is really what we should have been talking about. And what is that going to cause Renly to do? And how is that going to change this battle? What are the strengths of Stannis and the strengths of Renly? So again, that land, that massive army versus a great fleet would have been almost unstoppable.
Yeah, so. Because you think about later when he informs her that Renly is dead, killed by Stannis, that's she hugs, that's when she picks Tyrion up, right? She picks him up and spins him around because she's just so elated at that moment. She just didn't have the foresight to maybe think about that. Maybe it's just because she's just so worried about, Jaime's captured, her dad is off fighting a losing war, and Joffrey's here as king and starting to show signs of maybe being a little crazy.
Yeah.
So she's got a lot on her plate.
And sometimes I think, us having seen the show and us having, knowing where Cersei gets to, really not even quite yet in the series, but almost there. Her character develops a lot. And during this time of pressure, she's better during a time of peace when she's really just using her ladies and the people at the court to manipulate and move different pieces on the board. Whether it's using poison or different things like that. But when it comes to this major pressure of like war and big moving pieces, she sort of crumbles a little bit under the pressure. Mm-hmm. And although she's trying to very much so making good efforts and trying to set things up, I almost wonder if Tywin knew that and knows his children very well and understands that city needs made ready. And I don't know that Cersei is doing the best job. Had Jaime been there, been a different thing, but he's not. There's a boy king. I mean, even Robert Baratheon would have made the city. Again, we wouldn't be in this whole situation if Robert was alive, but just depending on who is there, I think it's important to kind of consider who's in leadership and who would be making these decisions. So that's why Tyrion is sent to make the city ready. But
well, that's a really good point, actually, what you said about Cersei's character and her not really doing well in pressured situations. I mean, when she is acting almost essentially on her own, right? I mean, what are the things that happen in the books? She really is on her own after Tyrion leaves, right? Tyrion kills Tywin. And that's when we start to get some of those Cersei chapters, which, again, I really like those Cersei chapters, getting some of her insight as to, why she really is the person she is. Mm-hmm. Especially when it talks about how, you know, she's supposed to marry Rhaegar and her life's supposed to go this certain way and it doesn't. And then she gets Robert Baratheon, who says a different woman's name on her wedding night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that. And then, you know, she talks about how just her relationship with Robert in general and how he'd basically just, you know, do what he wanted. But, you know, when you start getting those chapters and then she's on her own, you know, her first big blunder is the Faith does not go very well. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, doesn't just and in the books, the Faith stuff is still going on. You know, and then so then if you want to start looking at the show and you look at some of the things that I think will happen, I do think that she's going to blow up the Sept of Baelor. I think that's pretty likely to happen in the books. But then then it's a little bit harder to say, you know, in the show, you look at the way it kind of ends where I think her decision, well, it's kind of hard to say really, her decision to not help fight the others, idea, bad idea. I don't know, but it clearly her defense strategy against Daenerys does not work at all. And I think a lot of people have issues with that because they view Cersei as this character who is so smart and so good at the Game of Thrones. And she's just, you know, tossed to the side basically.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things you can look at is look to this chapter and see her defense of the city, you know, here, and what was she struggling with? What was she not getting right? And who did she need to sort of adjust her plans? It's like, yeah, they're good, but they're not iron, you know, tight. And Tyrion makes them that way. So yeah, she's missing something when she doesn't have her family around her. It's not as good. You know, this lone lioness is not as good as a lone wolf. And actually, really, our Starks would even say that the pack needs to stay together, right? So there's lessons to be learned there. And I think you're right. Maybe later on when she is it's just up to her and making these big battle preparations. I don't know. Just on the show. We don't really know. I'd love to see in the book.
Think that's why, you know, and I think the way they do it in the show is so powerful, right? Where Cersei's about to give Tommen, the essence of nightshade, right?
Right.
Because she talks about, like, you know, she doesn't want him to be hurt, so she's literally about to kill her son,
which is crazy. Can I?
I mean, she's literally about to do it.
I know.
She's literally about to do it until the door gets, you know, kicked in.
Right. Well, we'll get there.
No, go ahead.
I mean, my thing, like why, like, again, I don't know. I think she's just so obsessed with protecting her children. And if she can't, then no one can. She doesn't want them to go through anything without her being by their side. And that is, again, her thing. That's one of the weaknesses that she has, because really think about it. I mean, they're probably going to, oftentimes these children were used as hostages or they were kept in a way, you know, like, I don't know. I think it would have gone different than she was thinking there in the show and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, she basically lets Tyrion, without really any sort of fight, send Marcella off to Dorne, right? I mean, I think she probably could have come up with a better strategy. It seems like Cersei is best when she's getting revenge, right? Or, as you said, you know, it's in almost a period of peace, and then her revenge is, like, real serious. I mean,
real
serious, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, ruthless, completely ruthless. Like, you know, just from the show, right? You know, because you just are able to see some of that stuff later. What she does to, not Sorella Sand, but the vipers.
Sand snakes. The
sand snakes. I mean, like, you know, poisoning her daughter and forcing her to watch it, and then blowing up the Sept of Baelor and all
that was crazy.
You know, what she does to the Septon, right? You know, the shaming her with the mountains. Oh, jeez. I mean,
jeez.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is, you know, where she is, you know, as you said, kind of at her best. So, yeah. Great point on that.
And just one more thing on Cersei. Like, you think back, her life could have been so much different. I mean, her being in love with Rhaegar, or like liking the idea that maybe she could be betrothed to him and stuff, was that's That's crazy. Like, to, just to think too that she would maybe would even someone besides Robert Baratheon, just anyone. I mean, and even if it is Robert Baratheon, like had he have loved her the way that he was supposed to or whatever. I mean, it could just be totally different. Because she and Jaime were ready to grow up. They were at this point where they were ready both to kind of go their own directions and fulfill, do their Lannister duties and their deeds and stuff. So, but it just goes such a different direction for them. So,
yeah, I mean, it does. And I mean, so much of it just goes back to Tywin. I mean, that's all of his kids are the way they are because of, you know, Tywin Lannister. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it is interesting. I mean, to think about what her life would have been like had she married Rhaegar Targaryen. Have you ever seen the memes of, there's like a meme that says, you know, if Tywin had survived, right, season four, and it show, it's like, you know, Cersei, you will marry the Night King, right? You know what I mean? Like, just like what, all of his plans to do that kind of stuff.
That's funny.
So, yeah. So, all right. Okay. So back to the chapter here. So as they're walking out, right. And they're headed to a brothel, right. And this is where we meet, Shataya, right. And Aliyah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Say that three times fast.
Yeah. Really?
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, so Tyrion kind of asked to meet them. This is where they're from the Summer Isles, where we did our maester study. You know, and in the Summer Isles, being a whore is considered an honor and pleasing to the gods. So I'm sure Tyrion's all about, you know, Tyrion wonders what the gods have to do with it. And just that it would be much more religious if he could, you know, pray with his men.
Oh, with his.
So,
Yeah.
So, okay. So. Yep. They lead Tyrion upstairs. Aliyah just directs him into a wardrobe where he finds a secret panel. And beyond that, a hidden shaft down to an underground tunnel where he meets Varys. You know, Varys is always just waiting down in these weird, you know, secret compartments, secret tunnels. You know, then Tyrion asks him, you know, can she be trusted? And Varys explains that she has no love for the queen and is grateful to be rid of Alar Deem. Remember back, you know, Tyrion got rid of him. And Tyrion asks how the brothel came to have a secret entrance. And Varys explains that the tunnel was dug for another hand who would not enter the house openly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then they enter and they go into a stable. Varys helps disguise Tyrion as a child, and they saddle a horse to ride to Shae's manse. Tyrion tells him that Stannis has accused Jaime and Cersei of incest and asks how he came by that suspicion. Varys responds that perhaps someone whispered it to him, or else he could have, you know, he simply looked at the colored of a bastard hair as Jon Arryn and Eddard Stark did, which again, you know, nobody seems to get. Nobody seems to, you know, put two and two together. At this point, it's almost like Superman, right? You know, when you look at Superman, he's got his glasses on. He's Clark Kent. He's Superman, you know.
Right. Yeah, it is. So this is where I said, like, and they kind of bring up the, like, did he have a certain, I think they say in the chapter, you know, that he had maybe access to a certain book and looked at hair colors and things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Varys is tipping him off that sort of, yeah, this is out there, actually. And we know about it and we're clever enough to figure it out. And so maybe, yeah. And we know, the reader, too, that Stannis was a part of all of that and was going around with Jon Arryn and mysteriously was not around. So... You know, there's that whole thing. It never really gets talked too much about, but like...
Much more after this. That's really kind of... This is really kind of the end of it.
Yeah, and it's you know, Jon Arryn dies and sort of like, well, then Stannis just sort of knows... Did Stannis know that, like, he was in jeopardy of possibly... You know, like, because you don't really know. It is not really sure exactly what happened to Jon Arryn and what the motive was. Was it, you know, truly just directed, you know... Like, is it Cersei directing Littlefinger? Is it Littlefinger? Who's actually behind this and what are the motives? So if you're Stannis, you're sitting there going kind of like, ugh, all right, well, we stumbled across something and not really sure what to do. Because he was around for that, but it maybe wasn't as in on it as Jon Arryn was or as deep as Jon Arryn was, but still.
When does Stannis go to Dragonstone? Does he go to Dragonstone before Jon Arryn dies or after?
I don't know. Let's look. It's again, it's before the series starts. Because you know, Robert Baratheon after John Arryn dies comes north,
rides north, and that probably takes him like a couple months to do so.
Yeah, and it's like I think Stannis too was. Let me see here. He often. Let's look. Robert's Rebellion, Lord of Dragonstone. Okay, during their investigations, John Arryn had agreed with Stannis that his young son, Robert Arryn, would be fostered with Stannis on Dragonstone. However, this did not come to pass as John's wife, Lysa, fled back to the Vale with her son after John's death, right? So there's that. It's not really telling us, though, whether he was there, you know, when did he go? Yeah, is that really not?
Yeah, because regardless, so he goes back to Dragonstone. He goes back to Dragonstone after John Arryn dies, and I guess what is his plan? Does he know Cersei's going to kill Robert, and doesn't do anything about it? Does he? He certainly doesn't come forward with it.
All it said, you know, really, in the first book, it talks about how that he was massing his fleet, and so he is again the master of ships, and doing what he's supposed to be doing there. So what, like, that was within his capacity and in his role to be doing that. So it doesn't look too suspicious, but it's hinted at that, like, he's going back to gather his strength and decide what to do next. You know, he believes that Cersei is the one who poisoned John. Lord Eddard Stark wonders why Stannis left, believing it was due to the discovery of whatever secret John was allegedly murdered for. Although not realizing that Stannis was also...
Maybe he just thinks going to Robert won't believe him.
Yeah, the other thing, too, that they mention is that instead of Stannis becoming his Hand of the King, he picks Eddard Stark. And that is sort of a slight, and so it's almost two blows to Stannis, and he decides he's going to Dragonstone. And it's just sort of,
to do his own,
you know,
thing, right?
Yeah. It's basically.
Yeah, because I certainly don't think that Stannis would attack if Robert's still alive.
No, I think he's just trying to decide what to do. When does he come back in with this information? Yeah. Because he was there, a part of those investigations. Eddard Stark does request that he come back, politely kind of wanting him to come back to the council. And really, it's also when he is investigating some of this and he's retracing John Arryn's steps and learning, you know, okay, so may need Stannis to come back and fill me in. And interesting that Varys knew this the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
And we hear that in the first book. We hear it here again. It's just... Right now, that's sort of the way Varys wants it. He wants this chaos. He wants things to be tumultuous and stuff here in King's Landing because he has his own plans. So
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, basically, that's mostly it for the chapter. Except just they talk a little bit more. Tyrion wonders where he's getting the information. You know, he kind of says, you know, you put two and two together. He asks him if it is, Tyrion declares Varys that he is either his best friend or his worst enemy, and Varys says, you know, I feel the same way about you, which is good. The Varys-Tyrion relationship is one that I'm glad that, you know, hopefully I think we're going to see that again if the show tells us anything, just because I think they go very well. They go very well together. So, All right. Well, we do have a Raven. This is actually sent to our website. You guys can bendtheknee.podcast.com. You can send us messages there as well as btkcast@gmail.com. So this is from Sir Andre of the Marches. Does Aemon know of the Tower of Joy, and has he puzzled out that Jon is his great nephew? Aemon was in contact with Rhaegar, and so he probably knew of the love affair and the baby to be. And if Rhaegar was aware of what happened in the Tower of Joy, he might have told Aemon that Eddard killed his own sister and their baby. But as soon as Eddard came back north with a bastard, Aemon could have pieced it together that they were related. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay. So let me think here. So Aemon's in contact with Rhaegar. Okay. I'm trying to pull up here. Like, how much is he in contact with? I mean, that's the thing, too, that you kind of wonder about. Like, is he keeping in touch? I mean, we've all speculated that he's keeping in touch with Blood Raven for a while, and that Blood Raven's keeping tabs on Rhaegar, and so you could even go that route if it's not directly with Rhaegar. I don't know, man. I mean, I think it's likely that he does know some of it. I don't know that he's very perceptive, though. You know, Maester Aemon is very perceptive. It's a lot, though, to kind of take in, you know, that he might have told Aemon that Eddard killed his own sister and their baby, but as soon as Eddard came back north of the Bastard, Aemon could have pieced it together that they were related. So what does he mean there? So he might have told Aemon that Eddard killed his own sister and their baby? That line. What do you think?
He might have told Aemon that Eddard killed his own sister and their baby. Yeah, that is... I'm not entirely sure what he means by that.
Like what I'm taking that as in, like, he might have told Aemon that Eddard killed Lyanna Stark and their child. Like, is that something... Like that maybe that Rhaegar...
Rhaegar was aware of what happened in the Tower of Joy. He might have told Aemon that Eddard killed his own sister and their baby. Oh, like, maybe he didn't even want Maester Aemon to know. Oh, I think that's what he's saying. He's saying, so maybe Rhaegar knew what... Rhaegar, you know, had foresight to know that Eddard would go to the Tower of Joy. And so... Okay, so this is how I'm kind of reading this. Aemon is in contact of Rhaegar and knows of the love affair to be, but Rhaegar, knowing, having some sort of mystical, you know, we all do kind of assume that Rhaegar has some kind of like mystical foresight about the Tower of Joy, which is totally possible. It doesn't mean it's happened, okay, but it is totally possible. And you and I we say that a lot. I think a lot of people think that he kind of has some idea of what's going on at the Tower of Joy. He obviously knows Lyanna's pregnant. So I don't know if he knows or has any idea that she might die. But so maybe he says that to Aemon in a way to sort of protect Jon. And so, you know, but Aemon, you know, in knowing the goings on of the realm and hearing stories and stuff, can piece it together that bastard is, you know, he doesn't know, maybe he doesn't know his name, it's Jon Snow or whatever, but is actually a Targaryen, is Rhaegar's son.
Yeah, see, it's interesting because I think, you know, maybe it's sort of, you think of Melisandre and her misinterpretations of the flames, maybe Rhaegar did have some foresight. It's why he has his Kingsguard there, and he does sort of foresee a death, and he thinks it's because of her brother, you know, once he realizes that they've had a child, you know, maybe there's some misinterpretation there and that's passed on to Aemon. That could be, because I kind of think it would almost be the opposite, that he would let, that Rhaegar would let Aemon know that the child that was born there, like if Rhaegar is able to perceive or see that a child would come from the Tower of Joy and that would be his child, that he would almost want to pass it on to Aemon. You know,
right.
But now the other piece here is, as I said, is Aemon is very perceptive. And I think he then could, I think he could maybe piece it together and kind of figure it out or kind of wonder that Eddard Stark came back with a child that wasn't his. He's an honorable man. He would never do something like this. He hears all of the rumors. Maybe he has some knowledge of the Targaryens and how their traits are passed down and how when they mix their blood with those like the, you know, the, whether it's a Baratheon, Baratheons are a little
anything,
even, you know, there's some, yeah, some connection there. Like with the North, maybe he realizes that, that the Northern traits would win out or something. So,
right. Yeah. Especially, well, they talk about how the bloodlines, the Targaryen bloodlines had been running weak, right? You know, because it's so much incest. So it's possible, you know, pretty much anybody else is going to, their bloodline's going to, yeah, kind of take over. So that's definitely something. And then, you know, Aemon could maybe just see him and be like, you know, I know the traits of Targaryen since I grew up at a time when there were a lot of them, and I see a lot of that in Jon Snow. And then maybe it's also not, maybe he doesn't put it together until Jon comes to the Night's Watch, right? And he learns, oh, you're Eddard Stark's bastard son, you know, and maybe it's then that he could realize it, when that's why he has that conversation with him about telling him who he is. You know, it's not, I think sometimes we think maybe Aemon knew like the entire time, right? But it's possible he kind of came up with that discovery once John was there.
Yeah. Right. Maybe.
Benjen's there too. And so I'm sure he and Benjen have talked at some point, you know, just talked about, you know, their whatever life or family or, you know, whatever.
So here's the thing, you know, we know that Aemon, and this is again something on the wiki as well, and he was talking to John, whether it was earlier this book or at the end of last book, where he's talking about the test that he went through, not rushing back. I think it was at the end of the last book, and you know how he was tested over these different times, seeing the destruction of House Targaryen, and it's true. Yeah, he is corresponding with Rhaegar. Wasn't sure how much, but I mean enough that it's noted. You know, so. Mm-hmm. Maybe a raven is sent to him, and sort of it is what keeps Aemon there at the watch, and it's his third and final testing. But he knows that someone's going to be sent his way, or that there's someone, you know, maybe somehow he does know that that there's a Targaryen that is saved or preserved or whatever, and he gets that information from Rhaegar. But like that last communication from Rhaegar would have had to been right before the Battle of the Trident. And when Lyanna is, you know, in about to have a child, he doesn't yet know the state of what's going on there, unless, like you said, there's some perception and he can perceive or look into the flames or whatever it may be, have a green dream or a dragon dream or whatever, and sort of foresee what was to come, and he's passing that on to Aemon Targaryen, which could be,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a good question. It's cool to kind of think about like their correspondence, because we often we're matching him up with Bloodraven, but you know Rhaegar, who is there and who is making these plans, who's going to the tourney of Harrenhal, you know, might be getting guidance from one of the wisest men, you know, in Westeros, and someone who knows the Targaryen family intimately and could have been king and who was brother to a king and all of this stuff. So yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, especially since the other Targaryens, you know, his dad is. You know,
mad,
crazy. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good raven there, man. Thank you
I like
very
them.
Much, Sir Andre. Yeah. So, yeah, guys, if you want to send us ravens, you can do so at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee, podcast.com. If you guys want to follow Ezrai on social media, you can do so for me at Super Gains Bros on Instagram or Twitter. You can follow Ez at womprat_2m. Ez, anything else before we kind of close up shop here?
No, I'd just be on the lookout for some of, you know, I was talking, I think, I can't remember where I hinted this at, but I've been really looking at these different characters. So like Tanda Stokeworth, who's in this, was a reference in this chapter as someone I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to save because there's a lot to talk about with her. And some of these other characters who I'm rediscovering and making new connections about. I was talking to Sir Matt just the other day about the Boltons and how early did their plotting take place. You know, maybe they weren't even, I mean, Catelyn is hinting the entire time that they're not as loyal as we think they are or that they should be, and we don't trust them. So got a couple of cool things that I think will be fun for us to either post on Patreon or over on YouTube. So just just excited to kind of do that for you guys. So be on the lookout for that. More content coming your way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have definitely an extended edition for this episode. We'll be doing here. And for all you guys hanging out, we did this on our Facebook Live. You know, we never know when we could go live. Ez and I want to do a lot more of these just kind of live hangouts. We can record YouTube comments or whatever. So it's just a lot of fun hanging out with you guys. We really appreciate it, especially in these dark times. that we're living in. You know, I mean, we can't. It's illegal to go outside right now, which is the craziest thing I think I've ever. Literally, it is the craziest thing I've ever said in my life. In my life, is that it's legal to go outside, pretty much. So, all right. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 16, Brand 2 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that the night is dark and full